And let's see, we are going to go into a public hearing on Senate Bill 612. And would you like to, I don't know, if you'd like to give us a little rundown on this, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 612 directs the Department of Administrative Services to change the name of the Burns Archive Center to the Eugene D. Timms Computer Archive Center.
Okay, thank you. And I see that we have a very long list of people to testify.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hill.
I would just like to say, because I was around in 1995 as staff to Senator Hamby when she introduced the bill that resulted in the formation of the Archive Center, in terms of, members don't understand what that is prior to 1995, all data backups were done locally here in Salem, in terms of, and so the state's investment information and technologies was at risk. And so in 1995, as a result of many different things, after a long process, negotiations, the lottery moved out a warm site to Burns. It was the first time that a state agency center moved out from Salem or the metropolitan areas out into the rural areas. There was a lot of work put into making sure that there was enough bandwidth out to Burns. Burns is located out in eastern Oregon and is one of the safest from a geological earthquake area of the state. There's a lot of looking in terms of where it should be, and Burns is also very economically depressed in terms of, there's a lot of speaking with Senator Timms last week, and he said there's like 150 homes that are for sale out there, just empty, because people are just leaving town because of the economic conditions. And back in 1995, the notion was trying to move some services out there, bringing jobs out there, and it's actually been successful in changing, I think, the way we look at how government services are delivered and where they're delivered and where they need to be housed. And it was a very successful, and is now actually paying for itself. The lottery has their warm center out there in case if there's a catastrophic failure in Salem of the central processing stock, they could turn up in Burns, and the state will be saved and will be able to play the lottery in a catastrophic event. As a result, agencies are backing up data, and we still have a lot more work to force other agencies to go out there, which could put another family out there at Burns, which may seem insignificant to us, but to communities like Burns is significant.
Okay, thank you for that. For that update.
I bet I know where he is.
Yeah, I think I will. Okay, is there anybody that would like to testify on Senate Bill 612? Okay, what I'm going to do, Representative, for your information, is I'm going to, because we're seeing if we can find Senator Harper to see if he wanted to come in and sharing the information with us. I'm going to temporarily recess the hearing on Senate Bill 612. And while our able committee administrator, the guy next to me here, sees if he can round up Senator Harper, and we'll go ahead and move on with the agenda, and then we'll come back to that.
Okay.
So with that, I'm going to recess the public hearing on Senate Bill 612. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3539 and House Concurrent Resolution number 5. And let's see, Matt, would you give us a little rundown on these, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 5 honors members of the 2nd Oregon Volunteer Infantry for valor in the Spanish-American War and the Philippine Insurrection, declares the anniversary of 1898 It declares the anniversary of the 1898 capture of Manila, which was August 13th, as Preparedness Day. House Bill 3539 appropriates monies from the General Fund to the Oregon Department of Administrative Services for the repair and refurbishment of the Spanish-American War Soldiers Monument in Portland. Declares an emergency and is effective July 1st of this year. House Bill 3539 also has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you. With that, I'm going to call, so when I call you up, if you'd like to speak on both bills or one bill at the same time, that's going to be fine with us because we are running a concurrent public hearing here. So, Greg Leo, and Greg, do you have somebody with you that you want to bring up? Because I also have Donna Hill.
Yes, Donna Hill and I and the representatives from the Regional Arts and Culture Council could come up en masse. We would be happy to do that.
Just bring them up. I would just ask that whenever, at least the first time that you speak, if you would make sure that you state your name for the record. But otherwise, Mr. Leo, this is your show, so please just go ahead and you can orchestrate it there however you want to, and we'll sit here and quietly listen. Thank you, Representative Hill.
I just want to make sure that all the committee members are kind because this is my mother.
Oh.
So be attentive and listen to us.
We will be very attentive because we always listen to Mother.
Thank you, Chairman Krummel, members of the House Government Efficiency Committee. My name is Greg Leo, and I'm here today representing the Oregon chapter of the Theodore Roosevelt Association. And I think it's, first of all, appropriate just for us to kind of introduce ourselves. And to my right is Donna Hill. Donna, would you like to say a few words? No. Okay. Eloise.
I'm Eloise Damrosch. I'm the Public Art Director for the Regional Arts and Culture Council.
Great.
I'm Peggy Kendallin, Public Art Manager with Regional Arts and Culture Council, who manages the
maintenance. Today we're going to discuss a bit of history, concerned with HCR 5, and then talk about the specific request to restore a historic statue in downtown Portland. What you see before you are people involved with history, concerned about Oregon, and in a sense we are serial statue restorers. We are people who are concerned about Portland's public art, but also about the lessons that these public art may have for Oregonians in the future, and how we can kind of carry some of these historic lessons forward. First of all, let me just say on behalf of the Theodore Roosevelt Association that TR loved Oregon. Oregon was kind of home ground for TR. He had a lot of friends here. Dr. Coe, who gave the statue in front of the Portland Art Museum, between the Art Museum and the History Center, was the mayor of the town in North Dakota where TR spent his days in the Badlands. And so once he moved to Portland, Coe led the progressive movement here and, of course, carried the state for TR on two presidential elections, was a national committee man for TR. And in the course of that, TR had lots of friends in Portland. Last summer, the TR Association raised money and, restored that statue as a private matter. And it was a lot of work, but it was also a lot of fun. In the course of doing that, Dr. John Gable came out from Oyster Bay, New York, he's the executive director of the National Theodore Roosevelt Association. And he and Bill Schaub and I went down to Lounsdale Square and took a look at the statue of the Second Oregon. The Second Oregon has been largely forgotten, but it is one of the most historically important military units of the Spanish-American War era. In fact, probably next to the Rough Riders, they were the ones that got most of the ink and most of the glory, and they were our folks here from Oregon. But as an Oregonian, as a lifelong Oregonian, as a historian, as kind of an amateur historian anyway, I didn't know the story. And then at the beginning of this legislative session, as I was going through the bills, I saw Senate Bill 388, which repealed the burial rights of Spanish-American War veterans. And then I was kind of shocked, and I thought, we are brushing aside the story of 1,300 historic Oregonians who answered the president's call, went forward, fought a war against what they perceived as tyranny, sacrificed their lives, three of whom won the Congressional Medal of Honor, the centennial of which all passed without public notice. And I thought, we have really missed an opportunity here to teach Oregonians about our own history and hopefully to inspire young Oregonians about the future. And so that's why the Theodore Roosevelt Association has grabbed onto this as an opportunity. And so what we are going to do today is talk about a little bit about the history, hopefully persuade you for a bully do pass recommendation on both of these bills, and try to talk about how we can try to carry forward the messages of civic preparedness, of volunteerism, and of all the qualities that made the Second Oregon such a great group of citizens at the turn of the century. And with that, I would like to introduce Donna Hill, who is closely related, in fact, is the niece, I will say, grandniece, of one of the Congressional Medal of Honor recipients, Marcus Robertson from Hood River. Donna? And I will turn the cards for you here.
My name is Donna Robertson Hill. I'm here to tell you what I remember about my great uncle Marcus William Robertson. Marcus William Robertson was born in St. Joe, Wisconsin. He was the oldest son of William Henry Robertson and Nancy Ann Pease. The W.H. Robertson family moved from Wisconsin and arrived in Hood River, Oregon in May 1885. They settled on the east ridge of the Hood River Valley in the Pine Grove area. They worked in the sawmills, had cherry orchards, wheat, and raised horses. Marcus's ancestors fought in about every war that the United States was involved in. They fought in the Revolution, the War of 1812, the Civil War. Uncle Mark joined the Oregon Volunteers in 1898. While in the Oregon Volunteers, he served in a group called Young Scouts. This group was a guerrilla group which served behind the lines. The United States was not prepared when they entered this war. They were using out-of-date guns and black powder, which when exploded, showed where the shooter was by a black cloud. In order to obtain guns to shoot with, they had to either shoot someone and take their guns and ammunition or find guns and ammunition lying about. In the process, his group of scouts came to a bridge which had been set afire by the enemy. The scouts had to go across to prepare for those coming behind them. He went first, leading the charge, routing the enemy. He was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. When he came back, he could jump a fence without touching it from a standing still position. He could shoot the head out of a chicken from a sitting position without getting up and aiming at it. He joined the Army in 1918. He was 47 years old. He was turned down because of his age, but he went to General White, who he knew, and General White signed him up because of his experience, telling him, "We need men like you." He was generous. My parents lost their home during the Depression. He and my grandfather opened their home, and we lived there for several years. He was listening to the news regarding the Bataan March. He was crying, and I was approximately 10 years old. I asked my mother why he was crying, and she told me he was crying for his friends. I asked, how could they be his friends when he hadn't been any place? She explained to me that he had been there and had experienced what they were going through and knew what was happening to them, and this made them friends. In 1936, when the Veterans of Foreign Wars came to Portland for their conference, they contacted him so they could give him his medal. At first he refused, saying he just did his duty. Then Portland Mayor John Carson, who was a family friend from Hood River, called him and told him if he wouldn't come to them, they would come to him. He was very modest. I had lived in his house for years and had never seen the medal or citation. When I was approximately 16 years old, I saw the citation for the first time. When I said, "Oh, Uncle Mark, did you do that?" he smiled and said, "That's what they say."
If we could introduce you to Marcus Robertson,
the gentleman on the far end here, you know, we believe this picture was taken in San Francisco, but we can't tell you whether it was on the way out to the Philippines or on the way back. The middle picture we have here are young scouts, many of whom were Oregonians. And they called them the tall men from Oregon because they were very tall, and they were the ones that raised the flag over the citadel of the walled city of Manila. And finally, this is one of the companies, I believe Company H, I think, of the 2nd Oregon Volunteers. And remember, there are 1,300 Oregonians, and in your packet, you will see the list of the Oregonians who were killed in action and who died of disease, primarily of yellowjack, or as we would know, yellow fever.
I'd like to now shift gears just quickly to talk about the statues. Basically, as you remember, the Spanish-American War was largely brought on with our concerns about human rights in Cuba. And, of course, the blowing up of the battleship Maine was a spark which ignited the war. There was great concern in the press and among the public about what had happened in Cuba. And Oregonians answered the call. President McKinley, at that particular time, America had not fought a war since the Civil War, so there was really little standing army except for what had been around for the Indian Wars. And so the states, individual states, were asked to come up with a quota of troops. Oregon far exceeded the amount that was asked, according to what historical records we can see. 1,300 individuals came forward. Many of them were very, very young, probably younger than they could have, really should have been to go. They drilled in what we know now as Laurelhurst Park, and they then shipped off to the Pacific. They were the first expeditionary force to leave the United States. When Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders were drilling in Tampa with horses they ended up not taking, the 2nd Oregon was cruising across the Pacific on its way to be the first into Guam, to be the first into the Philippines, to be the ones that took Manila, and finally to be the ones that acted as the provost guard for Manila and then eventually quieted the insurrection that followed the war when the Germans tried to move in the wake of the war to take over the Philippines. So, in Oregon, what was happening is Harvey Scott, the very vocal editor of the Oregonian, was raising money for a statue, and that statue ended up being the Lounsdale Square statue. So I'd like to now switch the kind of presentation now to Eloise, who will talk about public art in Portland, specifically about the Lounsdale Square statue, what we're trying to do with this public art, and how this symbol is in dire need of restoration. Eloise?
Thank you. In 1980, the City of Portland and Multnomah County passed a percent for art ordinance, and this was actually modeled after the state of Oregon's percent for art ordinance, so it's carrying on the tradition in the Portland area. And we're in the business these days, over the last 21 years, of commissioning new public art of all kinds all around the Portland region. And starting about 10 years ago, or a little bit longer than that, we also started setting aside a small portion of the Percent for Art funds to create a public art maintenance fund. And that has provided funds to take care of all the new work that we commissioned. But in the early 80s, the city, the Arts Council, inherited all of the traditional historic existing sculptures that predated the Percent for Art program, and it is now our charge to maintain all of those sculptures. And we firmly believe that just as we need to take care of city streets and parks, that the investment in a public art program is something that needs to be made on an ongoing basis. So that's why we've been setting aside funds all the time for the new work that we commission. But as I said, we've inherited all of these historic sculptures, including the one in Lounsdale Square, and we really believe that this is a clearly symbolic, as you've heard from the testimony of the it truly is a statewide memorial that deserves the attention of Oregonians. And as you see in your packet, it truly is in dire need of repair. This particular sculpture has neighbors. The famous elk that's in the street between the two squares was recently cleaned and conserved, and now we just routinely maintain it. And it's very simple once you've done the major treatment to clean it on an annual basis. And then the promised land, the sculpture of the pioneer family, is in the square just across the street, and that sculpture is annually cleaned and maintained. So that this particular sculpture is looking pretty tired in the neighborhood. Portlandia, right around the block, has been cleaned and waxed recently and looks pretty great also. So we really feel that this poor sculpture needs to be in the kind of condition that its neighbors are. We have managed to raise money for certain conservation efforts, private individuals. The donors of the Promised Land sculpture were private individuals who gave money as essentially an endowment when they gave the sculpture to the city. But this sculpture doesn't have a champion, and we really believe that the state should get behind it. And now I'd like to turn it over to Peggy to talk about the actual maintenance that we need to do.
Thank you. One point I want to make is that this is a one-time only expense.
Would you state your name for the record?
My name is Peggy Kindellan.
Thank you.
This is a one-time only expense for the treatment of the sculpture and the small fountain that is part of the park. Following this treatment, we have a maintenance crew who goes annually to clean the sculptures, especially following a treatment like this. We don't just spend this kind of money consistently. So the cost of care goes down. But we will be, just to summarize what will happen with the sculptures, we'll be cleaning it with pulverized walnut shells, which is a very soft product that doesn't damage the bronze and used by conservators nationally. And then we'll be cleaning the stone, and then in the picture you can see this, it's surrounded by some cannons and then these small bollards. And on top of the bollards are some decorative iron, cast iron finials, and there are five of them that are missing. All those have to be recast and repainted and cleaned up. And then on the fountain itself, you can see from the picture that the stone has been rusted with water coming out of the drinking fountain. And my hope in this treatment would be to replace the pipes that are probably corroding, and then you no longer would have the iron that would stain the stone. And the stone would take a lot of cleaning, and we'd also clean the drinking fountain as well.
Peggy, would you like to say a few words about the cannon? Because there's a bit of a story that you might find interesting. I tell the story.
You tell the story.
Okay, there's two cannon at the base of the statue. These are cannon from Fort Sumter. And what happened was Colonel Dosh was representing Oregon at an exposition in 1905 in South Carolina. And he said, gee, what a great idea. We'll bring home these cannon, and we'll put them at the base of our new statue. Well, he brought them home, and there was a controversy that broke out in Oregon over, gee, if we put the Fort Sumter cannon at the base of the statue, we'll be taking sides in the Civil War. I mean, the Civil War at that time was still something which was not theoretical and that distant in memory. It was something where people still had strong feelings about. So Dosh and the city fathers then thought, well, no, the history of this cannon is first it was used by the Union to defend Fort Sumter, and then it was used by the Confederates. So therefore, both sides used it, so it's suitable for our statue. So we have a politically correct cannon there.
Are those cannon or mortar?
Those are mortar. Thank you. Thanks for that correction. Just let me terminate our brief presentation here today by being Roosevelt asked, because the chair said if I wore my uniform today and gave my Roosevelt speech that he would help me with the bill. But just let me say that on the backside of my testimony is what I think is the seminal piece of Theodore Roosevelt's connection to Oregon. This is a speech that he gave in Portland on May 21st, 1903. And this kind of piqued my interest about the Second Oregon, because he says, it's a pleasure to me today to have the part of my escort, the men of the Second Oregon, who carried the expansion of our people beyond the Pacific as your fathers carried it on to the Pacific. Speaking to you here, I do not have to ask you to face the future high of heart and confident of soul. You could not assume any other attitude and be true to your blood, true to the position to which you find yourselves on this continent. I speak to the, and it should be people of the Pacific Slope, to the peoples whose predecessors gave us this region because they were not afraid, because they did not seek the life of ease and safety, because their life training told them not to shrink from obstacles, but to meet and overcome them. And now I ask that this nation go forward as it has gone forward in the past, and I ask that it shape its life in accordance with the highest ideals. And with that spirit today, members of the committee, we ask you to not only do something good with this history, but to do something good which serves an example for Oregon's youth in the future, that service above self and patriotism are important values, and that this statue and its restoration is an important symbol which carries these values into the future. And with that, we'd be pleased to answer questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions of our illustrious panel? Representative Worth.
I thank you for testifying and bringing the story. It is not only entertaining, but interesting and historical. I'm wondering, sadly, people don't have much historical reference, certainly not military reference. And so I'm wondering how much luck you've had private donor fundraising for this.
Let me speak to that. First of all, from the standpoint of what we did last summer with the Theodore Roosevelt statue, and then I'd like to turn it over to Eloise, and perhaps then Eloise can talk about efforts underway for the Joan of Arc statue restoration, which is the First World War memorial in Portland. Last summer, we took on the Theodore Roosevelt statue, which had been given to the city of Portland by Dr. Coe, who is, you know, the mayor of the town in North Dakota, that TR, and a good friend of TR, et cetera. And we worked really hard for over a year to raise the money to restore the statue, and we had a large celebration last August, and it was tough. I mean, we had to have a number of fundraising events, et cetera, and the way we did that was pull together all compass points, historical society, people were concerned about art, and luckily TR had his fingers in every various kind of community group. I mean, he started the Audubon Society, the Navy League, you know, right on down the line, the Harvard Club, and we went to all of these various groups and networked with them in order to raise the $10,000 or so that it took to restore the statue, and it was tough, but we did it. We would like to be able to focus our efforts in our serial fashion. I told you we were serial statue restorers. After we take care of the Second Oregon, which is a very, very critically important statue, we'd like to move on to the Battleship Oregon, which is on Tomical Waterfront Park in downtown Portland and is very, very historically significant and which does not have the state involvement that the Second Oregon did. These were, after all, Oregon troops, and that's the hook we think that is important, which we think state funding should hang on. If I might just toss it to Eloise for a moment to talk about Joan of Arc.
As I mentioned before, we in any kind of fundraising for this kind of project, and as Greg just said, we've been targeting people who would be interested in that particular effort. And with Joan of Arc, we've been thinking, well, we've talked to the French-American school, and we've talked to the Catholic Church, and what we really have been focusing on just this week is the women of Portland. And we talked to the mayor, who has co-signed a letter as the honorary chair with a local business person whose name happens to be Joan, and we tried to send a letter to as many Joans as we could. And we actually put together a list of about 100 women in Portland that we thought might help us with a contribution. And the letter just went out today, and we've also suggested that any women who wanted to have a male friend contribute, they could be part of Joan's male auxiliary. So we've really built this whole effort around people who would really care about a crusading, strong woman and join that effort. So it's that's why, again, we feel as if the state should really get behind this memorial because it is a memorial to Oregonians.
The other thing is we have a $25,000 federal match for the National Institute of the Humanities. If we do not raise $25,000 locally, and we've been trying now for over a year, just am I right about this?
Oh, it's a Save Art Sculpture grant.
Save Art Sculpture, thank you, which is some kind of a grant.
Smithsonian.
We were about ready to lose the opportunity, so that's why we're rushing before July to try to raise the $25,000 to do that. And that is the First World War Memorial, but the problem is the constituency has died off because of just the demographics. I mean, I found one son of a Second Oregon volunteer in Representative Crummell's district, And I asked him to come to the hearing today. He said, I'm 94, I'm in a wheelchair, I can barely get a letter out. And I said, you're off the hook.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Member.
Well, I guess that's kind of answered my question. And I lived in Germany for a number of years working for the Department of Army, and I was always amazed that every little town always had a memorial for whether it was only three men who served in this conflict or there. And there was such a connection with the entire community and the history, and it was passed down. And so I guess that's what I'm wondering. You didn't try the private fundraising with the Oregon with this project because there's just not the connection, the understanding of the history and the populace. Is that sad but true?
Yeah, it's sad but true.
But the good thing is, the flip side is that when we are successful in restoring and cleaning one of these sculptures, we always get press coverage. So the level of awareness, and you can tell the story when you have something to focus the attention on. So I think not only are we taking care of the sculptures, but we're helping to re-educate the population about those historic events.
And Representative Worth and Chairman Crummell, I'm sorry to break with the forum here today, but that's what Preparedness Day is about. It gives us a yearly opportunity to kind of retell the story. And that's what's tragic about this is that we've forgotten, that somehow through the mists of time, we've forgotten about these heroes. And these heroes create such an important example to our youth that each year, if we have an anniversary, we can retell that story. And that's why we have suggested Preparedness Day.
Are there any other questions? Representative Mark.
Thank you. Donna, I'd just like to add my name to the auxiliary for Joan of Arc, as the statue is in my district, let you know that I'll be also supporting this as I co-signed on. But I've seen the statue for many years now in the park and appreciated its realism and the what it stands for. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. I would just point out, kind of proudly I say this, my grandfather is a veteran of the Spanish-American War, and he came from he was not in the Oregon Volunteers. He came from New York and actually trained in the Tampa area with TR, and then when the ship sailed to Cuba. My grandfather was left standing on the shore at Tampa waving. So, but he was still a volunteer. He was
the PR success place egged all the boats.
That's right. He made sure that they got out to sea. The other thing I would very proudly say, I have familial connections with every conflict that the United States has ever been involved in. And so, anyway, so I'm very glad to have these two items before you today. So, with that, is there anyone else that wanted to testify on HCR 5 or House Bill 3539? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. I'm going to open a work session on HCR 5.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hill.
Move HCR 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Hill moves HCR 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments or discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Beck?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative March?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative
Ward?
Aye.
Aye. HCR 5, having received the constitutionally required number of votes, is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Hill, would you carry this?
I would be more than happy to.
Great. Representative Hill will be the carrier. Thank you. With that, I'll close the work session on HCR 5. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 5539. Representative Hill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3539 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hill moves House Bill 3539 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Beck.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Gerard.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Munch.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Ward.
Aye.
Chair Crow.
Aye. House Bill 3539, having received the constitutionally required number of votes, has moved to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Okay. Thank you very much. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3539. Thank you for the presentation this morning and the history lesson. Appreciate it. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 612. And Senator Harper, I'd like to ask you to come forward. Thank you for your patience and waiting.
You're very welcome. You guys consider a 3% telephone excise tax on the statute now?
Would you consider that on the Senate side?
I didn't joke with him.
He's referring to a memorial which is actually up in my committee this afternoon, repealing the requesting Congress to repeal the tax that they imposed to pay for the Spanish American War.
Ah.
You guys know that?
I didn't know that.
3% on your telephone to pay for the war.
Really?
Yes.
To pay for the war.
Yeah, Spanish American War.
So, hey, we should have them. They should.
Do we have?
Yeah.
See, it was considered at the time a tax on the wealthy because only the wealthy had
phones.
Oh,
right.
That's true.
Yeah.
Your opportunity, Mr. Chair, is this afternoon to come and testify on that. Spanish American War Day in the
country. Redirect those.
I guess my point is that it was progress.
Another
Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Steve Harper. I'm the senator from District 30. My predecessor was Senator Gene Timms. He represented our district for 18 years. He was very, very interested in rural economic development, being able to tie the west side to the east side and the economy. One of the ways to do this in this day and age is the telecommunications infrastructure. And he and Senator Hanby at the time got together, I believe it was 95, wasn't it, Jim? And worked on developing the State Archive Center. Several of his constituents approached me last fall as a way to honor Gene for his service, is to rename the Archive Center after Senator Timms. So that's what you have in front of you. We moved it out of the Senate about a month ago. The only testimony we had in committee was normally we do these things when the people are dead, but we elected just to move ahead with it anyway. So Representative Hill asked me if we could name it the Timms Hanby Center, and I said I'd leave it up to the House, but they think that's a little strange. When the Cowboys walk by the center in Burns, they want to know who Hanby was, but that was the discussion. So do you have any questions?
Great. Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Harper? I don't know if I should ask this or not. We do have a -1 amendment. I was just wondering if you had seen it.
I have not seen it.
Okay. Go ahead and take it down. It would insert Jeanette K. Hanby as so it would be the. It would read the Eugene D. Timms and Jeanette K. Hanby Computer Archive Centers.
Okay.
You alluded a minute ago that you wouldn't have a problem with that.
And I just asked that when we put a building in this district, we name it the Hanby Timms Building.
Okay. Fine with me. Are there any other questions for Senator Harper?
No. Mr. Chair, I do have a comment. Working on this is the history of this in terms of I know that Senator Timms, this was very important, Senator Timms, in terms of, as I said previously, in terms of bringing economic development out there. And I think in terms of Senator Hanby is a person who's always I think this is unique in terms of it was sponsored and crafted by an urban legislator driving and understanding the rural needs. And so I have a close connection to Senator Hanby. I think in terms of she did a tremendous amount of work. I have a lot of respect for Senator Timms. It's not a disrespect. I think it's respect for both of them in terms of what the effort that it took both of them to drive the agency and the state and the governor to approve and get the agencies to actually go and invest out in rural Oregon. It was a unique compromise between urban and rural.
Thank you. Representative Girard.
I just would add the comments that this was all done before I was born, of course, Senator Timms is well-respected, well-remembered, and did a very fine job for all of Eastern Oregon for those 18 years, and is certainly deserving, as I'm quite sure Hanby is. So.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay. With that, Senator, thank you very much for coming over, and again, thank you for your indulgence in the last hearing. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 612. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 612. Representative Hill?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 612.
Representative Hill moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 612. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, the Dash 1s are adopted. Representative Hill?
I move Senate Bill 612 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hill moves Senate Bill 612 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? With that, I would just point out, I know both of these senators, former senators, have a lot of respect for both of them. Senator Timms was co-chair of Ways and Means last year. Very interesting, or last session, I mean, very interesting character. I think it's good that if we're going to name something after somebody, and this is, I think, very significant in Senator Timm's previous district, I think it's nice that we do it before they're dead so they know how much we really did appreciate and do appreciate the work that they put forth in the, not only for their own district, but for the entire state of Oregon. So with that, clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Patton.
Aye.
Representative Brown. Aye. Representative Girard.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative
March.
Aye.
Representative
Wirtz.
Aye.
Chair Aye. Let's see. Senate Bill 612, having received the constitutionally required number of votes, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Who would like to Representative Girard, would you like to chair this, or would Representative Hill, would...
I would. Yeah.
How about if you co-carry? Would you...
I'd be more than happy to make comments directly after.
Okay.
I would be happy to carry, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you. With that, then, I will we'll have Representative Girard will carry the bill, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 612. Committee, we are not going to move forward with House Bill 2546 today. There seems to be a little bit of confusion around the bill, so we're going to get that straightened out. And then once we know that is straightened out, we will bring the bill back for a hearing and work session. So with that, there's nothing else to come before. Are there any announcements? No? Okay. With that, then, we will stand adjourned.